Okay, we're starting here on the top of Kof Amud Aleph by the two dots. Shachor kacheret, black like cheret. Amar Rabba Baravuna, cheret she'amru diyo. The cheret that we're speaking about here is diyo, which is ink. Rashi explains over here that cheret she'amru diyo is klomar lo kishachrurit cheret hanitach b'mayim. It is not the cheret that is dissolved and mixed in the water. Ela shachrurit cheret hanitach bidyo, but rather it is the black of the cheret that is mixed with the ink. So Rashi over here seems to indicate that the cheret is mixed with ink, and the ink itself causes the cheret to dilute its blackness. So if you had mixed it with water, then you would have gotten a lighter black, but we don't want it mixed with water. We want it with the dyo, with the ink itself. And so there are other, obviously, ingredients or materials that go into the ink besides the cheret, which is the black part of it. And the dyo is causing the blackness of the cheret that come to the color or the shade of black that we want. That's the way Rashi explains it. Tosafot in Gittin, when speaking about dyo, says that the core of dyo, which is possibly made with kankantum, which is a copper base, is green. And then the mixture with the cheret is what causes it to go black. And so therefore here he requires the cheret to be together with the dyo in order to have the dyo be black rather than green. Because the way that our Gemara reads, it doesn't seem to be that way. But he obviously had a slightly different girsa in the Gemara. But here you have a mixture of this cheret and ink. That's what we're looking for. Tanya Nami Ochi, we have a braita that says something similar. Shachor kecheret, that it has to be black like cheret. Shachor shamru dio, and the black that we're speaking about is the ink. So Gemara says the lema dio. It'd be just simpler to say ink. Why are you mentioning cheret? Iamar dio. If we mention the ink, havamina ki pachuta didyuta, in the watery part of the ink. Kamash malan ki cheruta didyuta. We want the sediment, or the hardened part of the ink at the base of the ink. So had you just mentioned ink, ink has both different shades and different consistencies to it. There's the liquid part of the ink, and then there's the bottom where it dries out, or the sediment settles in the ink. So had you mentioned ink, we wouldn't have known which one, or you could have picked the water part of it, which is a lighter black. We want the sediment at the bottom of the ink. That's why I mentioned specifically the cheret, which is the cheruta didyuta, the sediment of the ink, that part that settles at the bottom, that's the dark black that we're looking for. Ibai lehu, belacha o b'yaveshta. Do we want it to be moist, or do you want it to be dried out? So even within the context of the sediment at the bottom, do you want sediment at the bottom that's still in a liquidy form or a moist form, or do you want it actually dried out? Like if you look at an ink well, after the liquid is dried out, at the bottom, at the surface, you have black pieces of ink that are hardened at the bottom. So Tashma, the Rabbi Ami, Pali, Kurta, Didyuta, Ubodikba. That he used to crack off, peel off chunks of ink to use to check for Marodam. So clearly he's taking off something that is solid or something that is dried out, because otherwise you don't peel it away, you don't crack it away. So that's proof that we're speaking about something that is yveshta. Right? Tosafot over here says, Mikan mashma shidyo shalanu shukroi dyo, the ink that we used, which is called ink, midgamar kurta didyuta, since it describes it, that it has a kurta didyuta, mashma shu yavesh, that it's dry. But usir rabbeinu tam lechtov sefer Torah bidyo shal afatzim, fishu olam lach. Rabbi Reino Tam would not let you write a Sefer Torah with ink that has gallnut in it, because that remains moist all the time. So it has to be something that dries out. It has to be an ink that doesn't remain in its liquid form all the time. Otherwise, it's not what's being described over here. What's being described over here is something that does dry out, and something that can eventually be cracked and have a solid piece. So if you make ink that remains in its moist form, then that's an indication that it's not the ink that we're looking for. It's not the dyo that we are looking for. It's interesting because the Bali Tosafot, both in the processing of the hides for the cloth, as well as the ink, discussed this issue of afatzim, of gallnuts, whether they should be or should not be a part of the process. And the Rabbeinu Tam, in both cases, takes an interesting position with regards to afatzim. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, so if you have kikir, if you have, Rashi says over here, black wax, kidyo, like ink, uke anav, and like a dark grape, tmeya, that is considered to be tmei, bizoi shishaninu, amok mikain tmeya. That's what we saw in the Mishnah, that if it's a darker black, then it's considered to be tmeya. Amar Rabbi Elazar, kazayit, like a black olive, kazefet, like pitch, uke orev, and like a raven, that black is tahor. The Zoe Shishaninu Deha Mikain Tahor. Lighter than that is considered to be Tahor. So first of all, there is a machloket Rishonim with regards to the use of the term Amok in Deha. We're translating it like Rashi does. The Ramban seems to back that view of Rashi, that Amok means a deeper color, and Deha means a lighter or duller shade of the color. And that way, the description over here of the first three items are items that are darker than the black of the diuta or cheret shel diuta, and the latter three are things that are lighter or less black than that of the cheret of the diuta. So that's one view. There is a view that is just the opposite of Rashi's view, which is amok means deeper but lighter. And that is true by the case of nigaim. By nigaim, it says that the whiter it is, the more amok, the deeper it looks on the skin because of the contrast between the natural color and the white. So they say amok means lighter or less of the color, whereas deha means stronger and deeper color, maybe akin to today where we say that bahir is a lighter color and keha means a deep color or a darker color. Even though the word keha, word color, means lighter, weaker, it still means clearer or more pronounced. And so that possibly is what it means over here also when it says deha versus amok, that the amok means something that is lighter, and deha means something that is, even though deha means lighter, lighter means more pronounced. And therefore, it would be the opposite of what Rashi says. That might be helpful over here only because of the examples that are brought. It gives an example of an olive, and it gives an example of a grape. A grape has a more purplish tint to it, and an olive is a blacker form. Yet over here it says that the olive is deha, is according to Rashi a lighter form of black, less black, and the enough, the grape, is considered to be more black. So that might support that other view, although obviously you can differentiate and say that the type of black we're looking for has a purplish tint to it. And that's why the anav is a better representation of that. It's not as deep a black in the sense of blackness, but in terms of the depth of color of the purplish black, maybe the anav is a better example, or maybe their grapes were darker or blacker than we know. There is a third opinion, which is the opinion that's brought by the Tosfot HaRosh here in the name of the Rabbeinu Chananel, which is that they're actually both lighter blacks, just a question of how much lighter it is. There is Zamok, which is slightly more, and then there's Deha, which is much more lighter black, and they're both lighter black. The other thing you have to deal with is Shmuel's statement. Shmuel over here says Dio, ink, is darker than the black we're looking for. Well, didn't we just say that the black we're looking for is ink? So then how is it that ink is darker than the ink that we are looking for? So the Rishonim ask with regards to this, how to reconcile between Shmuel's statement and what we said before. The simplest way to say is that he simply argues on Rabba Bar Rav Huna. Rabba Bar Rav Huna says that Cheret Shamru is Dio, then he argues on that and says Dio is darker than what we're looking for in the Mishnah. It's not the black of ink. That's one way to deal with it. The other way to deal with it is to say that Shmuel is talking about moist ink, whereas the Mishnah was speaking about solid or dried out ink, as we just described before, with regards to the examples that he was taking from the dried ink. Or it could be the difference between the ink itself as the sediment and the ink itself as a liquid. So any of those distinctions could explain why Shmuel over here mentions Dio as being darker black, if you think it's darker, or lighter black, but differentiated from the Mishnah, and reconciling that with the fact that Rabbi Barhuna says Dio is the black of the Mishnah, so you have to come up with some sort of distinction between them. So now the Gemara says, Ula Amar, Kelevusha Siva, it is like the clothing of Siva, Rashi Riz over here, Siva is Shame Makom, Osim Sham Abushim Shkorim, it's the name of a location, and they make black clothing, or they're known for their black clothing. That's the type of black that we are looking for. Ula ikla la pumpadita. Came to Pumpadita, Chazila Utaya, Delabush Levusha Ukma. He saw this Arab merchant that was wearing a black piece of clothing. Amalahu said to the Rabbonon, Shachor Detnan Kihai, that the black of the Mishnah is exactly like the color of the beged that he is wearing. Martumine Porta Porta. They basically bought off of him piece by piece of the beged. In the end, Yavu Bey Arba Mea Zuze. I mean, he made 400 zuz, because all the people, or all the Rabbonon, wanted samples from this to know what the black was. So they each went to him to buy a piece of it. So he was able to sell the pieces for a premium, because he knew there was demand for them. And he made 400 zuz of this beged, because it was a sample that was the black of the Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Elu Kelim Ha'olairin Ha'baim Midinat Hayam. It is the begadim that the bathhouse attendants wear, and it comes from overseas. I mean, it's an imported black. That is the color of the uniform, I guess, of the bathhouse attendants, and that's the black we're looking for. Rashi over here explains that it's either the clothing or the uniform of the bathhouse attendants, or Olairin is the name of a place or a location, and that's what it means over here, that they were the black clothing of Olairian that came from Medinat Hayam, that came from overseas. So it's one of those two, or might even be both of them. Lememra, from Rabbi Yochanan's position, it would seem, Du'ukmeninu. We see from that that these clothing of Olairian are black. Is that really true? Vamarlu Rabbi Yanai the Banav. Rabbi Yanai in his Tzava tells his children, Banai, Altik Biruni lo bikelim shkorim, lo bikelim levanim. Do not bury me in black, and do not bury me in white. Shchorim, black, sheme eske, ve'yek avel ben achatanim. Maybe I will be zoche, Rashi says zoche, to go to Gan Eden, and then I'll be like a mourner amongst the chatanim, amongst the bridegrooms, who are all dressed in white, and I'm dressed in black. So I'd be at odds with what they're wearing. Livanim, don't bury me in white, sheme lo eske. Maybe I will not be zoche to Gan Eden, but rather end up in Geinom, where they're all wearing black, and then I'll be like a bridegroom in white amongst the Avilim who are all in black, and again, I'll be at odds with them. Ella bekelim holairin abayim medinat hayam. Bury me in this clothing of a lairin, which clearly is not black and not white. It's got to be something in the middle, something differentiated. Rashi says that it is sumke, that it is red. That is the term that is used in the Gemara to reference to red as sumak. Although here, maybe it does not mean red. It just means that it's sumak tvei, and it's more colored than white. Sometimes sumak is used as a contrast to white. So sumak just means it has more color or has more than just plain white. So it would make more sense over here to speaking about gray or something in between or an off-white rather than speaking about red, which would clearly be problematic in terms of showing up in red at a white gathering and red at a black gathering. It would be at odds. You would look out of place at both of them. So it's a little hard to understand, but that's the way Rashi explains it. Alma lavukmeninu. It's clear that the Olairin are not black. So Rabbi Yochanan said before it was black, and over here we're saying it wasn't black. Mar says, hello, Kasha. Hab glima hab betora. It's the difference between a cloak and a table. And as Rashi explains over here, a table does not mean literally a table. It means tablecloths and sheets. So when you speak about the glima, when you speak about the cloak, that is something that is sumke. That's something that has this in-between black and white. Whereas the sheets and the tablecloths that are made from olairin were black. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan was referencing to, is that type of black. So there is types of olairin that were black, and that's what Rabbi Yochanan was referencing to, and there are types of olairin that are not black, that are sumak, and that's what Rabbi Yanai was referencing to. Now, in terms of Rabbi Yanai's tzavah, his last will to his children, he makes an important statement just from Derech Eretz, which is that people have to accommodate or not be at odds with the surroundings or the environment that they're in. Obviously, if the people are doing something wrong, then you should be at odds with them. But if people are acting in a proper manner, it's inappropriate to do something that is different than everybody else is doing. You shouldn't be crying when everybody else is celebrating and not celebrating when everybody else is crying. You should be urav imabriot. You should be participating and joining with the tzibur. Again, as long as they're doing the right thing, you should not be standing out. You should not be doing things that make you differentiated from the tzibur bechlau. And it's important concept to make oneself pleasing to those that are around them. That's number one. Number two is Rashi mentions Gan Eden and Gehinom here as being what Rabbi Yanai was referencing to. But there is, as the Rishonim point out, a Yushalmi where Rabbi Yochanan gives the same instructions. And over there in that Yushalmi, it sounds like he's speaking about Tchiyat HaMeitim. He's speaking about in the future when there's Tchiyat HaMeitim, when he gets up. If he was amongst the tzaddik, if he was wearing black, it'd be at the wrong color. So amongst the Rishayim, if he was wearing white, it'd have the wrong color, the Tchiyat HaMeitim. The interesting part of that is that that means that Tchiyat HaMeitim applies not only to tzaddikim, it also applies to Rishayim, which is interesting in of itself. But that is the way the Yushalmi views this, not as being something about Gan Eden and Gehinom, but rather something about the future by Tchiyat HaMeitim. The last thing to note is also that it's an important perspective that an individual has about themselves. That a person should not always consider themselves to be a tzaddik, which is no chiddush, but a person also should not consider themselves to be a rasha. One should view themselves in life in general as a beinoni, and that whatever you do can improve your standing as a beinoni. Anything that you don't do or negative things that you do will downgrade your status. You shouldn't think you're too good or too bad. You should conduct yourself like a beinoni. Okay, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Bikulam. When it comes to all of these colors that you need to check, ein bodkim ela al gabei matlit levana. You put it on a white cloth to create a contrast for the color versus the white, because that gives the color pronounced feeling against the white, and then you'll get a better sense of what the color really is. So you need a white background in order to do that. Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdume, b'shachor al gabei adom. But black, you do it on a red background because of that contrast. Amar Rav Yirmiyah Bidifti, Velo Plige. They don't argue. Habishachor, Habishar Damim. When it's talking about black, that's where Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdume says you do it with a red contrast. Whereas with other colors of Dam, you do it with a white contrast, like the statement of Shmuel. Matkivla Ravashi, Ravashi says, Iachi, Lema Shmuel, Chutz Mishachor. Shmuel makes a definitive statement. Fikulam, all of them. He doesn't say all of them besides black. He says all colors. Elam Ravashi, Bishachor Gufei, Kamiflage. They don't argue about other colors, you're right. By other colors, everybody agrees that white is the background they use for the contrast. But with black, they argue, which is Shmuel says, you use white as the background by black. And Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdume says that for black, you use a red background. Amar Amula, Kulan, Amok Mikain Tamei, Teha Mikain Tahor, Kishachor. Now, what he is addressing is what's missing from the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, with regards to the color black, that which is amok, whatever is deeper, we're going to go with Rashi's view, that it means a darker, deeper black, that is tamei. Deha, that which is lighter, duller, less black, is tahor. That's what the Mishnah says with regards to black. The Mishnah never addresses the other colors. It does not say that the other colors have that same consideration, which is if it's darker or lighter, it will be tamei or tahor, respectively. The Mishnah only writes it with regards to Shachor. Question is that true by the other colors? Or is that only true by Shachor? So that's what Ula is coming to say here. The same way that we said by black, the deeper, darker the color is, it'll be Tamei. The lighter, or the duller the color is, it'll be Tahor. So too, that has application by all the other colors, just like it has application by Shachor. Velamai Shna Shachor Denakat. So then why did the Mishnah only write it by Shachor? Why didn't they write it by all the colors? Salkatat kamino hoyo, v'amar Rabbi Chanina Shachor Adom ho, ela shalaka. Because we would have thought by black, where Rabbi Chanina told us, we saw this in yesterday's daf, that black is just really red that's gone bad. Hilkach afilu dehamikan namilitame. You would have had a havamina that any black would suffice, because it's not really black that we're looking for. Black is just an indication that it was once red and then turned black. So why does it matter what the shade of black is? As long as it's black, it came from red. So that would have been your havamina, kamash malan, that that's not true. When we mentioned the black in the Mishnah, it is a threshold color by which that depth of black is what makes it tamei, and only darker than that would be tamei, lighter than that would be tahor. But not to say that that's solely applicable by black. It applies to all the colors of the Mishnah. It's just that there was a bigger chiddush to tell you by black. Rabbi Ami bar Abba Amar, v'chulam amok miken tamei, deha miken nami tamei. He says, no, that's only true by black. In the Mishnah, that lighter is tahor, darker is tamei. With all the other colors, it doesn't matter. Darker or lighter would be tamei. Those other colors are just representative colors. They are not exact colors. Quotes, Mishachor, with the exception of Shachor, where the Mishnah specifically says, Ella, the obvious question is, Mayahani Shurei Drabonon. If that's the case, then what do the Shurim of Drabonon do at all? Why would you give examples or samples of the colors in the Mishnah when it doesn't matter how red it is? Doesn't matter how Yarok, yellow it is in the Mishnah, because any shade would be problematic according to this. So he says, La Fuke Deha de Deha. That it comes to exclude something that is significantly different in shade. So say, for instance, you take red. So then a light red and a dark red would still be considered red. But if you got something that's a really faded red, that it's significantly off the red, meaning that's even towards the side of pink or light, light red, that may not be classified as being tamei. That's what it comes to exclude, deha de deha, that extreme shade of the color. Vigadamre, Rami bar Abba Amar, v'chulan amok mikain tahor, deha mikain tahor. If it is darker or lighter than the color mentioned in the Mishnah, it is tahor. It has to be exactly the color of the mentioned in the Mishnah, which would make sense because the Mishnah gives you samples of those colors. So it's that color. Chutz mishachor, with the exception of shachor, where darker than that would also be tamei, lighter than that would be tahor. Ulahachi mahaneh shirei derabanan. That's why the shiurim and the Mishnah matter, because they're the only ones that are tameim. And actually, it's interesting because what will end up happening in the Mishnah is that there are shades of colors. Let's say that red and yellow are on a spectrum of color. That means you could go from a color that is tamei, and then when the shade changes, it'd be tahor, according to Rami bar Abba. And then, as you continued along that shade spectrum, it would come back to being tamei at a certain level when it hits the yellow. And so, what you have is that there are stations along the way whereby those colors would be tamei. In between them, shades in between them would not be tamei, which is only interesting. It's possible, it's plausible, but which is interesting that despite the fact that you have different colors in the Mishnah and they are on a continuum in terms of their differentiation, those colors, nevertheless, only when it's exactly that color would it be tamei. In between those two colors, it would not be tamei. So then the Gemara says, Bar Kapara Amar, Chulam Amok Mikain Tamei. Anything, meaning all the colors in the Mishnah, if it is darker, deeper color, it is tamei. Deha mikain tahor, lighter or duller is tahor, chutz mi mazug, with the exception of the diluted wine, which is one of the examples of the colors in the Mishnah. Shamok mikain tahor, deha mikain tahor. That, if it's whether it's lighter or darker, then it is still tahor, because it is exactly that color. So according to him, everything is governed by the color, and deeper is tamei. The lighter than that color is tahor, with the exception of the one color of the diluted wine, whereby there he says it doesn't matter whether it is lighter or darker than that. Either way, it's tahor. And now the Gemara says, Bar Kapara adyuhu lei vedochi. They gave him, or they showed him, stuff that was lighter than that, and he said it was tahor. Amiku lei, they showed him stuff that was darker than it, vedochi, and he said it was tahor, meaning that it was lighter or darker than the color of mezeg, of the diluted wine. And Vama Rabbi Chanina, Kamen Nafish Gavra, the Libe Keshmatate. How great is this individual, meaning Bar Kapara, and here you see the Marshoi as in, the Ovid, Kishmate, that he does like his own memra, or the way our Gemara says is that his heart is where his stock is, which is that he believes that mezeg is only exactly that color. Anything that deviates from that color, lighter or darker, is tahor. And sure enough, when they brought him things that were a little lighter, a little darker, that's exactly how he paskin. So that's a wonderful thing when someone has a psak halacha, and he actually, in reality, carries out that psak halacha, meaning that's his natural tendency, or he has the discerning eye to see the distinctions that he paskins la halacha. So that's a great thing, because we're going to see now that there are obviously individuals who know what the halacha is, yet they don't have the eye to be discerning and be able to tell the Marot Adam, despite the fact that they know what the halachot are with regards to the Marot Adam. That's why we see the Chachamim over here always looking for samples of the color, or telling their Tamidim, look, that's the red of the Mishnah, which was when we saw the bloodletting. That's the black of the Mishnah with the ink or with the beged that the person was wearing. So they're always looking for samples that people can see what the color is and can be discerning about the color, which means that it's not, first of all, clear to all people. And even when it is clear, you can use samples because they help you in terms of comparing and contrasting the colors. All right, now it says, Ukakaren karkom. We saw in the Mishnah that it is a karen, which we said could either mean a corner, although as we're going to see in the Gemara now, it's going to be much harder to explain that according to Rashi. Or it meant kikaran, or panav means like a bright crocus. That's what's being referenced to as the color in the Mishnah. Tana, lach, v'lo yavesh. We're talking about the crocus, we're talking about one that is moist and not dried out. Tani hachada, kitachton, v'lo kelyon. Like the lower ones, not the higher ones. V'tani idach, another bright, kelyon, v'lo tachton. Like the upper ones, not the lower ones. Tani idach, kelyon, v'ko shekein tachton. Like the upper ones, and certainly the lower ones. Tanidach, and we have another braita that says, Ketachton, like the lower one, Mekoshiken Kelyon, and then certainly like the top one. So here you have a bunch of braitot that seem to contradict each other in explaining what you're looking for on the crocus to get the color that you are searching for. So Amar Abaye, Tlato Dare, Veltlate Tarfan Habyon. There are three rows of three leaves on the crocus. Nokut dara mitzia. You're supposed to take the middle row, mitarfa mitziata biadcha, and the middle leaf in your hand. So that will then explain all of the brightot that we had here. This is what Rashi says. Now, the word tarfa in the Gemara in general means a leaf, and Rashi translates it as aleh over here, as a leaf as well. And the crocus actually has petals or leaves. It has rows on top of each other. That would seem to be what the reference is to over here with regards to the crocus, but I'll explain in a second that maybe it refers to something else. The way that Rashi explains it is now we can reconcile all the brayta. Because the brayta that says, take the upper one, not the lower one, that's a reference to the middle row and the bottom row, the rows of leaves. You're supposed to take the middle row, not the bottom row. So the elyon means the one above the lower row. That's the one you should take, not the bottom row. The one that says that you take the tachton, not the elyon, is a reference to the top row versus the middle row. So the middle row, which is the tachton you're supposed to take, not the elyon. That's explanation of the first two brightot. The latter two brightot would say that it's the tachton and certainly the elyon, or vice versa, the elyon and certainly the tachton, is within that middle row. They even within the middle row, the leaves there are not exactly on the same plane. They are one above the other. So one is higher than the other, even on that middle plane. And that's what it says there. Anything in that middle row is good. But the middle leaf of the middle row is the best. So then the braita that says, you can take the tachton, means you can take the lowest leaf in that middle row. It's certainly the one above it, which is the middle one, would be even better. And the other braita that said, elyon, is referring to the top leaf in the middle row. So that you could take, and koshekein tachton, certainly the one below it, which is the middle one, you could take. So that's how you reconcile all the brightot. And that's the way Rashi explains it, that's referencing to the leaf of the crocus. It happens to be that the crocus also has these stems or stigmas that come out of it. There are three of them. So they are actually dried out and made into saffron, and that's the source for saffron. Now, those have three, which would seem to match what we're saying over here, The problem is that it doesn't seem to be that there are three rows of those. So it's hard to understand what they're referencing to. And so maybe the explanation could be that the petals that are purplish around, and then you have these red stigmas that come out from which the saffron is made. And then internally in the flower, there's like a yellowish cone. So it might be that the three rows that he's referencing to are the petals, the stigmas, and the cone in the middle. And the middle of those three are the red stems. And then you'd have to understand why in those three red stems, one of the three is better than the other two. But it might be interesting only because those stems are much darker. They're like a deeper reddish or purple versus the leaves, which are more like a violet-like purple. And so that would probably make more sense in terms of the coloration of blood that we're looking for, because these are clearly all shades of red. And so the fact that it's red would make more sense than it being purple. But then again, it's hard to explain then what it means, three rows of three each, because that doesn't seem to be the case when it comes to the flower of the crocus. Kiatu the kamei the Rabbi Abahu, when they came before Rabbi Abahu, and the Ho told them, Bigushayu shaninu. They have to be in their dirt, in their clods of dirt, of earth that they're in. It seems to be that that requirement, it matches what we said at the beginning here, which is that they have to be moist and not dried out. Well, how do you keep or make sure that they're moist and not dried out? You keep them planted. As long as they're planted, you know that they are moist, and that's the color that we're looking for. We said that the water that's mixed with earth and dirt, that is one of the colors. Tarabanan. Kimimei adama. How does that work? Mevi adama shmeina. You bring really fertile soil. Mibigat Beit Karim, which was mentioned in our Mishnah from the location called Beit Karim. Umetzif alea mayim. And you float water on it. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's the view of Rabbi Meir. That's how you prepare it. And Rabbi Meir, who is Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir, is the author of our Mishnah, because that's what's mentioned in our Mishnah. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Mibigat Yudpat. You don't have to bring it from Bibat Beit HaKarim, you can bring it from even Yudpat. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Mibigat Sachne. You can bring it even from that area. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Af Mibigat Ginosar. You can even bring it from the area in Ginosar, which is on the edge of the Kinneret. The Gemara in other places says that it's famous for its fruit and the richness of its productivity and its fruit. Kiyotzeben, or anything similar to them. So now, whether they're arguing with each other about what the location is, or whether they're additive and saying that this location as well is good for the sample, but they want to bring the earth from that area to create the color that we're looking for. Tanya Idach, we have another bright that says, Ukumeme Adama, Mevi Adama Shmeina, it brings fertile soil, Mibikat Beit HaKarim, Mitzif Alea Mayim Kipubata Shum. You float water on it until a level that is like the husk or the peel of a garlic that floats on top of the earth. Now there's no exact amount of water, because you don't know how much earth you're going to put inside of there. The soil that you're using, we don't know how much you're going to have, so we can't tell you how much water. All we can tell you is relative to the soil that's in there, you need water that goes a little bit above it, meaning like a peel of garlic above it. That's how much water you need to have. So it's relative to the amount of soil that you have there. And that's not just with the water added to the soil. Ela akurim. You need to have it mixed. It's when they are all mixed up and together, that cloudy water is what you're looking for. You're not looking for the settled water when the soil settles to the bottom and what's left in the water. You want it to be completely mixed up. That's the color you're looking for. So the low, if they settled, meaning that it's now clearer, the water, Koserba Ochran, you go back and restir them so that they have the color that you're looking for. Sho Ochram, Ein Ochram Biyad. When you mix them, you can't mix them by hand. Ella Bikli. But rather, you have to use a utensil. Now, that's not clear what it means, hand and Kli. Ibadu, what does that mean? Ein Ochrim Otam Biyad. Ella Bikli. You can't mix them with the hand, but rather with the utensil. Dolo Lirme Biyade. Don't do it in your hand. Don't put the soil in your hand with the water in order to make the mixture. If it's inside of a kli, meaning that you put it into a cup or a bowl, you can mix it with your finger or mix it with a spoon. That doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is where you prepare it. If you prepare it in your hand or you prepare it in your kli, that's what the memra is saying. Only prepare it in a kli, not in your hand. Odilma delola achrinu biyadei ela bemana. Or is the meaning here, don't mix it with your hand, rather with a kli, so that you can't use your finger to mix it, you need to use a spoon to mix it. Tashma, so maybe we can learn that from here. Kashu bodkan, ein bodkan ela bekos. When you check them, you can only check them in a cup, in a glass cup. But da'inti bailach, the Gemara says that's not an answer, because you could still ask, bedika bekos, akira bemai. You need to do the bedika, you have to settle it or put it into a cup. The mixing, we still don't know what it's done with. So we still don't know the answer to our question. Was the statement that you must prepare it in a kli, and then you can do the mixing any way you want? Or does it mean that you have to prepare it in a kli, but you also have to mix it with the kli, and you can't just mix it with your hand? And so we don't know, and that's what Gemara says, teku, it's left unresolved. It seems to me that the Gemara at least concluded that you must prepare it in a kli, not in your hand. What we don't know is there a second requirement, which is the mixing be done by a kli, not by your hand. You have to do it on the spot, meaning that you have, wherever you get this fertile soil from, you need to do the mixing right there on the spot, because when you take it to somewhere else, it already changes colors, because of whether it means the moisture or the environment. Whatever it is that changes also causes the color to change as well. Rabbi Chanina, pale kurta de gergashta ubodik bay. He used to peel off pieces or chunks of the potter's clay and use that for checking. That was what he thought the color was. Laidale Rabbi Shmuel be Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Shmuel be Rabbi Yossi used to curse be'askara with croup or diphtheria. He used to curse the individuals with that death, which is a terrible death. Anybody who does like that. And he explains why. Rabbi Chanina, who the chokim. Rabbi Chanina had a very discerning eye, and he understood how to check using the potter's clay. Kuliyama lav chakime chokhi. The rest of the world doesn't have that, whether it's ability to be discerning or knowledge to be discerning, and therefore if they use the potter's clay, they're going to be misled. So that worked for Rabbi Chanina, but that's because he's Rabbi Chanina. If you're not Rabbi Chanina, it's not going to work, and therefore Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi curses anybody who behaves or emulates that behavior of Rabbi Chanina, because he's a unique individual and you can't extrapolate from him to others. And so others can't use that method of checking. All right, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Chokhmata de Rabbi Chanina, the wisdom or the insight, the erudition of Rabbi Chanina, garmal ed lo achze dama, he caused me not to see marot dam. Mitamina mitaher. When I used to make something tamei, he used to tell me it was tor. Mitarana, when I said it was tor, mitamei, he told me it was tamei. So since he was so good at marot dam, that he used to override my rulings all the time and tell me I was wrong. At that point, I lost confidence in my ability to see damim, and therefore I don't do marot damim because I don't have the discerning ability like Rabbi Chanina. I'm Rabbi Elazar. An vantunuto de Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Elazar says the humility of Rabbi Chanina garmeli de chazai dama caused me to see marot dam. Ma Rabbi Chanina da an vatan hu machit nafshei de safek. V'chazi, Rabbi Chanina, who is a humble person, he, despite the fact that not wanting to get involved in whether it's controversy or issues, he still nevertheless put himself into the position of dealing with sfeikot, meaning dealing with marot dam. He didn't say it was beneath him to do that. He didn't say that, why should I be involved with this? I'm going to have to give psak halacha and maybe be controversial. They don't want to have to be the one who takes a position or a stance in matters. They want to be under the radar. And yet, he did it anyway. Analochazi? So if he saw stuff, analochase? I can't see, meaning that I won't be able to pass an halacha. If he's willing to give psak halacha with regards to it, despite his personality where he is a tremendous anav, then certainly I, who is not at the level of Rabbi Chanina in terms of my humility, I certainly am obligated to give psak halacha, and that's what Rabbi Chanina caused me to do. It's an interesting contrast, because Rabbi Elazar is a Talmid of Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan's reaction to Rabbi Chanina was, I can't deal with this, so I'm not going to do it. And Rabbi Elazar was spurred on by Rabbi Chanina to give psak halacha and to enter this world of marot. It's clear here that Rabbi Elazar had a more discerning eye or had a better feel for the Marot Dam than his Rabbi Yochanan. So now, Amar Rabbi Zera, Tiva de Bavel, Garmale de lo Chazai Dama. The word Tiva, I'll explain in a second, caused me that I don't see Marot Dam. So now, the word Tiva can be translated in a number of ways. It's used in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Bet Amud Bet, where it says there, the reason that the Romans are brought into judgment first is because Tiva Yatsa B'chol Olam. Because their Tiva has reached the whole world. Rashi over there seems to say that it references to their name. That their reputation or their name has reached to the far ends of the earth. That they are an empire that has influence over many places. And they're well known even to places where the Romans themselves aren't the ruling empire. So that would be Tiva. But the word Tiva also comes from the word like Matbeya, which means coin. And so the meaning of Tiva can also mean their currency is accepted worldwide. Now, the two are probably interrelated because people accept your currency when you have a reputation or where you're known. So in their day, where every empire or every kingdom was minting their own coins, then to accept coins from different areas, you would have to be confident that the other area was a real government, and it was a government that would stand behind their coinage, and that the value would be maintained. So the two might be connected, which is that when your currency is accepted everywhere, that's because your reputation has spread, or in essence, you become like a reserve currency. Everybody's willing to take your currency because of the nature of your standing. So that might be that they're interchangeable. The last possibility is the word teva, which is generally not used in this way. And the Gemara could be the nature of. But again, that may not be so different than what is being said here, which is that the nature of the people is their reputation or their, again, their currency is speaks to their teva, to their nature. So they might all be correlated. The two possibilities most likely here is that Rabbi Zera, either Tivaba of the Bavel, the coinage or currency in Bavel, he was unable to be discerning, which we find in other places in Shas, that in order to be a shulchanei, a money changer, you have to be able to tell the difference between good coins and bad coins, coins that would be accepted in the market, coins that would no longer be accepted in the market. Because there, the coins were value or stored value. They were real gold or real silver. And coins, as you know, over time, if you use them, they wear down or they have diminishment in their weight or in their size. The question is, when do they go from being just regular wear and tear to being something where the value is now diminished and people won't accept it? That's an expertise that is needed. And that may be what Rabbi Zera is referring to is, I didn't have that expertise. I could not differentiate between different types of coins, whether they were good or bad, or whether this currency or that currency was acceptable. That may be one thing. Or it could be that Tiv'a has to do with the nature or reputation type of people that come from Bavel. That persona or that type of individual caused me not to be someone who sees Marot Dam. Now, whether that means he's speaking about himself, that the nature of people from Bavel, and I am from Bavel, caused me not to see Marot Dam, or he's saying that his inability to be discerning about the different types of people was what caused him then to say, if I can't be discerning there, then I also can't be discerning with regards to Dam or Marot Dam. The Amina, because I said to myself, B'tiva lo yadano, if I don't know, again here, if I can't differentiate in currencies, or I can't differentiate in the natures of people, or I can't, but Tivolo Yadana, I don't really understand why, but because of the nature of the people in Bavel, I'm unable to be discerning. The Dama Yadana, so then I'm going to stick my head into the situations with regards to Dam. If I can't be discerning here, then I'm not going to be discerning there, and therefore he refused himself from dealing with Marot Dam. The Mamra Tibetiva Talya Milta. What does one have to do with the other? There are two different types of expertise. One expertise is the ability, let's say if it's coins, to see the difference between a coin that's worn down and not worn down, versus colors, whereby you're dealing with discernment and shades of colors. There are different skill sets. You might be able to tell the difference between shades of colors, but you may not be able to tell the difference between a coin that's acceptable or not acceptable. Again, you could say it by all the different things. You're dealing with a skill set that is completely differentiated. And so why would you then say that you're not going to see Dam Marot Dam just because of your deficit in another area? Baha Rabba, That's the girsa that we have over here. Hello, the yada b'tiva, below yada b'dama. He was someone who did know about currencies, or did have the ability to discern within people the nature of people, yet he was not discerning with regards to dam. If that's the case, then you see there's no correlation between them. There's no correlation between them. Why not? See, my old dam, maybe you have a gift for that. Versus the tiva issue, which you cannot discern. So the Gemara says, Koshikein Kamar. He's saying, certainly, Umar Rabba to the other Tiva Lokazadama, Rabba who did know and had to deal with Tiva, whether that's currency or different natures of people, he still didn't see Marotam. Vana Akse, and I should do it. I can't even get to the Tiva part of it. So he thought it was a Koshikein. So even though the skill sets seem to be differentiated, nevertheless, he saw Rabba who had that skill set and still didn't see the Marotam. But certainly, I who doesn't have that skill set certainly shouldn't be seeing Marotam. Therefore, he recused himself from it. Now, the Oroch Nener has a little bit of a chiddush over here, whereby he suggests that the difference between Tiva and Chazai, Dama, has to do with the differentiation between different types of blood, and then within a single type of blood, can you be discerning as to whether it's Tameh or Tahor? So you can tell the difference between Dama Makor versus down from another part of the body. So you might be able to differentiate or understand this is this type of blood, this is that type of blood. But then once you know that it's dam that's coming from the isha, can you then be discerning as to whether it's dam tahor or dam tameh? So you might have one skill set, not the other skill set. That's what's being suggested over here. That Rabba had the skill set to differentiate between dam that was dam from the makor versus dam from an injury or something else. Versus the other skill set, which he didn't have, which was once he knew it was Dam Makor, he couldn't tell whether it was Tahor or Tameh. That's the way the Oroch HaNer explains it. That might help explain the Gemara upcoming, by which we will understand that the Girsa in the Gemara was not always Rabba. The Girsa over here was Rova originally, and that's the Girsa that Rashi had as well. The Baal Tosafot claimed that it should be Rabba and not Rova in order to distinguish between this case and the story that's upcoming. And the Oroch HaNer's solution might be impacted by which way you think it goes. So now the Gemara says, Ula, ikla la pumpadita. Ula came to pumpadita, aita la kamei dama, velo chaza. He brought him maro dam to see, and he refused to see it. Amar oma, Rabbi Elazar, the mara d'aret Yisrael havo. Rabbi Elazar was considered to be the mara d'atra of Eretz Yisrael after the passing of his Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Elazar takes over in Tveria the position of Rabbi Yochanan, and he is the authority in Eretz Yisrael. Nevertheless, in Mikla L'Atra de Rabbi Yehuda, when he came to the city of Rabbi Yehuda, Lo Chazidama, he didn't see Damim. He didn't see Marodam. Even though Rabbi Elazar was an expert in Marodam, it was the Mora Atra of Eretz Yisrael, when he came to the city of Rabbi Yehuda, out of respect for Rabbi Yehuda, he refused to see Marodam, because it's inappropriate when you're not the Mora D'Atra, even if you're a greater Rav, to give Psak Halacha and not defer to the local authority. So certainly, if Rabbi Elazar, who is a big gun, in that he learned originally in Bavel, and then he moves out to Eretz Yisrael to be with Rabbi Yochanan, so when he returned to visit Bavel, he would not paskin in front of Rabbi Yehuda. So if Rabbi Elazar didn't say it, Ana Achsei, Ula says about himself, I am not even on the level of Rabbi Elazar, and he refused to see the Marodam in the city of Rabbi Yehuda, I certainly should not be seeing it. Bamai Karuleu Maradara Yisrael. Why was he known as the great leader or the master of Eretz Yisrael? Dao Itzata, Daiti Damalik, the Kameh to Rabbi Elazar. There was this woman who brought Dam or Marodam for Rabbi Elazar to see. Habayoti Rabbi Ami Kameh. Rabbi Ami was sitting right in front of him. And Arachei, he smelt the blood, Rabbi Elazar. Amala Hadam Chimudu. That dam is coming from desire. It's the blood of desire. Botar the Nafka, after she left, Itbala Rabbi Ami. Rabbi Ami chased her down, caught up with her. Amralei, she said to Rabbi Ami, because Rabbi Ami wanted to understand whether Rabbi Elazar was right about what he said. The woman never responded to what Rabbi Elazar said. Bali Ayabaderech, my husband was out traveling. Vichamativ, and I desired him. Kari Alei, Rabbi Ami says about his Rebbe, Rabbi Elazar, Sod Hashem Liriyav. The secrets of Hashem are to those that are fearful of him, to those that are Tamidei Chachamim, like Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Elazar was able to not only understand what the dam was, he was able to sense what caused that dam or what that dam was from. Now, what's not clear here from the sugya is why does it matter? The fact that it was dam chimud instead of dam nida, does that have any impact? That's a machloket arishonim as to whether dam chimud inherently is tamei. Is dam chimud, which is dam that is caused by the woman's desire to be together with her husband, that the Gemara later on in the Masechta is going to say, tava, if you ask a woman for her hand in marriage, which means that there's going to be biyah, then she has to wait shiva nikim. She has to wait 7 days because there is this phenomenon that when a woman reaches that point of desire or excitement about the biyah, that sometimes she has a discharge. Now the question is the discharge tamei, which seems to be what the story is later on in the Masechta, that the discharge is tamei because you have to wait shiva nikim. So then over here, when Rabbi Lazar said it was dam chimud, Ruth says dam nida, doesn't really matter, they're both tameim. He was just showing that he understood, or he could tell the difference in the damim. It was just an example of his expertise, but not necessarily a change in the din. It's tamei, and it's tamei. So he just said it was dam chimud, and that's what Rabbi Yami wanted to understand. Did he really understand dam? Was he so discerning and so correct about this? And turns out he was. That's one way to learn it. The other possibility is that dam chimud is tahor, and that Rabbi Elazar was paskening that this woman was tahorah. And that's why Rabbi Yami was shocked that through smelling it, he was able to tell it was dam chimud and tahor. Whoa, what about later on in Masechta it says when you proposition a woman that you have to wait shiva nikim? Why do you have to wait shiva nikim if dam chimud is tahor? The answer to that is that we're afraid of that in the dam chimud, there's also dam nida that comes out with it, but it's overwhelmed by the dam chimud. So yes, the dam chimud itself is inherently tahor. But there might be also dam amikor, dam of nida, that is exiting with the dam chimud, and it's going to get covered up or overwhelmed by the dam chimud, and that's why we say the woman is tmeya, misafek, because of that. The same way that we today also say that dam bitulim makes a woman tmeya, even though dam bitulim are tahorim. The reason that she is tmeya is because we're afraid that she saw tipat dam that got overwhelmed by the dam bitulim. So that would be the explanation, and in that case, there would be a halachic ramifications to whether it's dam chimud versus dam nida. Ifra Hormiz, Ime the Shvor Malka, Ifra Hormiz, who was the mother of Shvor Malka, who was the king of Persia in the Sassanid dynasty. It happens to be that the Gemara reports in a number of places that Shvor Malka and Shmuel had a very good relationship, and Shvor Malka really respected and loved Shmuel, and that worked out well for the Jews at the time. He was very favorably inclined towards the Jews of the time. And so here you see another one of these interactions with the Jews, which is his mother, of Shvor Malka, Shadra Dama the Kameh de Rava. She sent her dam to Rava. Abiyotiv Rav Ovadia, Kameh, Ravadia was sitting in front of Rava in Arache, and he smelled it. Amarla, he said to Ifrahumis, Hai dam chimudhu. This is dam of desire. Amarle, she said to her son, meaning the king, Tachazi kama chakima yudai. Do you see how brilliant the Jews are? Amrar La, the king says back to his mother, Dilma kisuma baruba. Maybe it's like a broken clock. A broken clock's right 2 times a day. So maybe he just got lucky. And even though he said it was dam chimud and it was right, because Ifra Hermes, the mother, corroborated that it must have been correct, that what he had said, nevertheless, he got lucky and he got it right. Or the way that the Gemara expressed the expression, even a blind person can find the opening at some point. They get lucky and they find the opening, even though they can't see it. He was questioning whether it was just blind luck, or was it something that was a skill set that he had over here. The problem we have with the story, and this is what leads the Tosafot to change the girsa above, is that it sounds like from this story that Rava was an expert in damim. Yet above it said that Rava did not see Marot Dam because he could not differentiate. Rashi has the gears of Rav above, Rav over here, and he says that it was miraculous. That it was a miracle from Hashem that Rav, even though he didn't normally see Marot Dam, here he was able to be discerning and see the Marot Dam and give the right conclusion. That's how Rashi answers. Says, it was miraculous that he was able to make those decisions or discernment with regards to the Dam. The Baal HaTosafot say, Rabba Garos, up above, when he didn't know how to see Damim, that was a reference to Rabba. Over here, we're talking about Rava. And the difference is that Rava didn't see Marotam, but Rava did see Marotam. And that's how he reconciles the two Gemarot. There's a third way to deal with it, is that is Rav Avadya. It's not clear here who smelt the dam. It says that Rav Avadya was sitting in front of Rava, and then they brought the dam, and then he smelled it. Who's the he? Is that Rava, or is that Rav Avadya? So it's possible that it was this Talmid Rav Avadya who was able to do that, and not Rava himself. The Rava didn't see Marotam like we saw above. The Gersa was Rava above, he didn't see it. Who smelt it and gave him the answer? That was Rav Avadya. So his Talmid did it on his behalf. That may be the answer to the question. The other possibility is what Aruch Daner said before, which was that there's a difference between types of blood and whether it's Tamei or Tahor. Rava had the capacity to differentiate between types of dam. What he couldn't do was tell you whether it was Tamei or Tahor. So here, this is a question about what type of blood it is. Is it dam chimur? Is it dam nida? Or a dam from the Mekor. And that he could tell the difference between. When it came to before, when we said he couldn't tell the difference between damim, that means when he gets a red from the Mekor, he doesn't know if it's Tamei or Tahor. So that's how the Aruch Lener explains the difference between whether this is Rava and that's Rava, where he had one skill set, which was the Tiva skill set, to determine the different types of dam, but he didn't have the Dama skill set, which was to determine whether it was Tamei or Tahor. So now your question, which is a fair question, is why is she sending him blood if she's not Jewish? For Malchus, the king of Persia from the Sassanid dynasty, he's not a Jewish king, and his mother is certainly not Jewish. So why is she sending damim? So Rashi over here says that explains that Ifra Hormiz Nachrit Haita, she was not Jewish, and her name was Ifra Hormiz. And the meaning of Ifra means chain in Greek, which means kumo apirion, something that is very pleasing. And Hormiz means yofi of the shadim, a demon-like beauty. So she had this chain about her because she had demon-like beauty. So it's speaking to that she was a beautiful queen or the mother of the king. Then he says, despite the fact that she was not Jewish, she had a soft spot for the Jews, and therefore krova lehit gayer. She was close to converting. Ba'af korbanot haita sholachat. And she used to send presents or korbanot as well. So she was acting as if she was Jewish or at least inclined to be Jewish. And so that's how Rashi explains that she sent the dam, because she simply was trying to become Jewish or trying to convert. Others just suggest she wanted to see what was the Jews were made of. She wanted to understand what made them special. And she sent the dam to test and see if they really understood or they really knew, and it was not any halakhic issue. After this son, Shvor Malka, doubts the skill set of Rava or Rav Avadya over here, she says, okay, Hadar Shadrele Shitin Mine Damo. So then she says, all right, you think it was lucky? She sends him 60 different types of dam. Bekula Amrinu, he knew all of them. Ha'o Batra, the last one, Dam Kini Naba, it was blood from a louse, Velo Yado, and he didn't know. Now, this is somewhat problematic for the Aruch Lener's explanation, because if his explanation was that he knew how to discern between different types of dam, he didn't know how to discern whether it was Tamei or Tahor. Over here, to tell the difference that it's blood from a louse, that's something that he should have been able to do. So that makes that explanation a little hard. Of course, the other explanation is either Rava was a bookie, but by the dam of a louse, it's very similar to human blood. And there he had a hard time discerning what it was. Because we saw before, that was one of the examples of the red that would be considered like the dam nida. Or, again, this is the difference between Rava and Rabba. Rabba didn't have this skill set. Rava did have this skill set. But even within that skill set, it only went so far. He couldn't figure out this last one. Istaya Milta, it came about that he got lucky, meaning that Hashem helped him. There was divine providence over here. Shadula, Srikuta, Demiktala, Plame. He sent her a comb that killed lice, or in essence, he sent her a lice comb as a gift. Amra, Yudai, Bitavne, Dalibo, Yadvitu. The Jews sit, Tavne means within the cheder, the room of the heart. That's where they sit. The way Rashi explains that is that they are chachamim gedolim. They are the center of wisdom in the world because by chance he happened to get the answer right. She sent him 60 types of dam, and one of them was a louse. When he sends her the gift of a lice comb, she thinks he's sending it because he figured out that that dam was the dam of a louse. So it turned out that the gift that he gave was the answer to the question about that 60th form of dam. She was so impressed by that that she sent the comb. So now Rashi's explanation that the whole thing was miraculous is a little more sensible now. Because even the last one, Rava didn't know what it was, and he got lucky that he sent a comb. Hashem put it in his head to send a comb, a lice comb, as a gift, and it turned out to be the right answer. But that was all a nace. And you can say the same thing about all the other dummies before that. It was all a nace. That's how Rashi described it. According to the others who say that he was discerning, it was still, one of them was just too hard for him to figure out. He didn't figure it out, and he got lucky when he sent the gift that that was the last one. And she's so impressed by that, she says that the wisdom of the world is by the Jews. Rabbi Yehuda, Bereisha Havachazina Damo. In the beginning, I used to see Marotam. I used to be an expert in Marotam, and I had women would bring me Marotam, and I would see them. Keva de Amrali Ime de Yitzchak Bri. So after I found out from the mother of Yitzchak, my son, which means his wife. Now, the reason he might have said it this way is because it's possible that he eventually divorced her. And that's why he calls her the mother of his son rather than his wife. Hi, tipta, kamaita, lo matinin la kamayu de rabbonon. The first drop that comes out, we don't bring to the rabbonon to check. Mishum de zihima, because it is polluted, or it's putrid, and therefore we're embarrassed to bring that, so we don't want to bring the first dam. After that he says, lo chazina, I stop seeing dam, because the women are not bringing me the dam. It might be that that first drop of dam was dam nida. They're not bringing it to me, they're bringing me the second one, and I might be meaning mitaher women that are really nidot or vice versa, because I'm not seeing the right dam, I'm seeing dam that's from later on, not from the core dam that's coming out. Then tmeya the Torah, vade chazina. On the other hand, the difference between dam from a woman who is in the 40 days after a zachar, those 33 days of dam toar, when it switches over to dam tamei afterwards, or for a nekeva after the 80th day where it switches over, or from the 7th day into the 8th day for a zachar, or the 14th day and the 15th day for a nekeva, where it switches from dam tamei to dam tohara, there I see it. Because over there's no zuama, because the dam is flowing all the time. There's constant flow of blood, it's just a question of the blood is tamei or tahor. Over there, I still see dam maro dam, because over there I don't have to worry that they're not going to bring me the first mareh, because it's not the problem of zuama. The problem of zuma is where it's caught up for a while, and then they have a discharge suddenly. But if it's discharging and flowing all the time, then you're not going to have that issue, and therefore I still see ben dam tahor le dam tamei. I don't see dam nida anymore because of what she told me. Yalta, who is the wife of Rav Nachman, Aita dama le kamei de Rabba bar Barchano. She brought her maro dam to Rabba bar Barchano, and the tummy law. He said it was tamei. Now Tosafot right away asks, we know that Rav Nachman was a bucky in Marot Dam. Why is she bringing it to Rabba bar Barchano and not to her husband, Rav Nachman? So Tosafot gives a number of reasons. First of all, he says, Shema lo haya bucky. He maybe wasn't an expert. And even though he gave information before that says that what's the type of red that is mentioned in the Mishnah, and he gave an answer, that's he had a mesora for that. Not that he was discerning or he knew that. He just had a mesora that it was that way. But not that he himself was an expert. That's one possibility. Inami aitachu sheshet shema ya machmir latzmo liot libo nakpo. She was afraid that he was going to be a machmir on himself. And being a machmir on himself would then make it that she would have to spend more time away from her husband. And the reason he'd be machmir is because it's him and his heart, or he'd be a little bit worried, and therefore he'd be willing to be machmir, because it's him. And he can do that. When it comes to other people, you can't be machmir at their expense. But in his own psak, he can be machmir. Even though it causes a problem for his wife, which is that he can't perform onah anymore. Nevertheless, the Achronim of here claim that that is part of the marriage contract, which is that when a woman marries a rav, she knows that generally people who are rabbonim are machmir on themselves. That's the natural way. They might give psak for the kula for others, but they're machmir on themselves. When she got married, she knew what she was getting into. And since that's the case, she accepted it. And she knows it could be machmir. That, therefore, if she gives it to her husband, she can expect, or the possibility of being machmir is there. And therefore, she went to somebody else in order to get the answer that she felt would be the right answer rather than the chumrah. Or, he brings another possibility, shalotit kaneh al-ba'ala, that she shouldn't become disgusted or put off by it. It's one thing to see a third party's dam. To see one's own wife's dam could be something that would turn you off, and therefore he would no longer be desirous of his wife. That's another possibility. So Tosafot brings all those different possibilities as to why she was bringing it to a third party and not to Rav Nachman. Hadar Aita l'kamei de Rav Yisrael v'rei de Rav Yehuda. She took the dam after Rav Barachana paskin that it was tamei. She took it over to Rav Yisrael v'rei de Rav Yehuda. So now that she not saw it to her husband, she's going to two different postgame besides that. The dochila. And he was matir and said it was tor. V'heichi ovid ochi. How did he paskin against Rav Barachana v'atanyo? We have a brayta. Chacham shitimei. A chacham that paskin something is tamei. Ein chaveiro rashai l'taher. Then his compatriot can't be mitaheret, even if he disagrees. Asar, if a chacham said it's asur, in chaveru rashai l'atir, then you can't come along and be matir, that which your compatriot said was asur. How over here did he pass in tahor, if Rabba Barachan already passed in tameh? So it says, mi ikara tmuyeh habimitamila. Originally, Rav Yitzchak Rabbi Yehuda was going to paskin that it was tameh, because he had heard that Rabbi Barchana said it was tamei. Came into Amra Le, after Yalta tells him, to call Yoma Habam Matkili, Kihai Gavno, in the past, anytime I brought him down like this, he would say it was Tahor. Vayidna Habadachash Beine. Today, his eyes were compromised. He had an ailment, something was wrong with his eyes today, and therefore, he said it was tamei. But I don't think it's right, because any other time I brought him this same color, he said it was Tahor. So after he heard that, dochila, he passed that it was tahor. So the Gemara says, ummi mehemni, is she really believed? She's a no god, badavar. She has vested interest in the outcome over here, and she's telling him information about a different psak. But not only is she telling him different information, she's telling him what the psak would have been. She's saying that I had colors like this before, and that chacham paskin that it was tahor. In, yes, vatanya, we have a brayta, ne'emeneti shalomar, kezera iti vavativ, that a woman is believed to say that I saw this color and I lost it. So you see that a woman is believed with regards to the colors that she sees. She can say, I saw this color, even though we don't have anything in front of us, any evidence in front of us, and we believe her. So too, with regards to Yalta, we believe the fact that she said that this is color that I brought before Rabbi Barchana in the past, Kipaskin, that it was Tor. Ibailo. She comes along and says, so-and-so, paskin, that this is tahor. The way Rashi learns the question is, can she paskin for other women? Meaning that if other women come to her with that color, can she say, that color I've seen before, and this Talmud Chacham paskin that it was tahor, and therefore she can be dameh, the dam there, to this dam and say that it is tahor, and we believe her? That's the nature of the question. Others just simply say that if she's coming to another chacham, can she say that this other chacham in the past saw this dam and was mitaher? Do we believe her? Is she able to do that? Tashma, ne'emeneti shalomar, kezereiti vavativ. We just said that a woman's believed to say, I had this sighting of dam, and I lost it. Marseh, shiny otam, delete lekama. That's different because we have no other evidence. The evidence is gone. There she lost the cloth. So the only person we can rely on is her. We have no other way of checking. We have no other way to discern what happened. So therefore, the only thing we could do is listen to her. That's why it's that way. But in our case, where the cloth exists or the stain exists, why shouldn't she either, according to the ones who say, bring it to the chacham to get a psak halacha and find out what he says, rather than say, this is what he said in the past, and that's why I'm okay now. Or when she's taken to another chacham saying, that this chacham passed in this way in the past, go to him and show it to him. Or in the case where it's women who are coming to her and she says, ah, this looks exactly like what I saw in the past and the Rav said it was tahor, why not just go to the Rav? You have it here, you can go to the Rav. Maybe you should go to the Rav. So in that case, you could differentiate between them and it's not a proof. So Tashma, what about our case here? The Yalta, Aita Damo de Kamei, the Rabba Barachana. Yalta brought Dam before Rabba Barachana, Mati, and he said it was tamei. Aita lekamei de Rav Yisrael, pray de Rav Yehuda. Then she took it to Rabbi Yitzchak Rabbi Yehuda, the Dochila, and he was Matir. He said it was Tahor. Hey, Chiyavid Ochi. How did he do that? Vatanyo, Chokum Shitimei, In Chaveru Ashadatayer, so on and so forth. V'amrinan, and the answer we gave was, Tumuye Havi Mitamila. Originally he gave him Sak that it was Tamei. Came into Amrale, after she told him, the Choyoma Matkila, Kiai Gavna, in the past, Rabbi Rechana always said it was Tahor in that instance. Vayinahu the Chashbeine, and today his eyes were compromised. Hadar, he reversed his psak and Dochila, and told her that it was Tahor. Alma Mamnola. It's clear that he believed her, because he was going to Paskin Tamei. The only reason he changed his psak is because what she said. So you see that he believed what she said, and that made it that he then changed the psak to the psak of Tahor. My answer is no. V'yitzhak v'yuda gamrei samach. He relied on his mesora. He relied on his own position. He was not relying on Yalta. He changed his mind because he felt that he was correct. Now, Tosafot over here deals with what is seemingly a major issue here in the sugya, which is the ability of an individual to shop the psak. How is it that she went to Rabbi Bar Chana and then afterwards went to Rabbi Yitzchak or Rabbi Yehuda? What gives you the right to go to this other Talmud Chacham? And the Gemara said, well, the only reason he passed in that way in this case is because she gave him the information that Rabbi Bar Chana she thought would have been matir in other situations, and it was unique to today where he got it wrong. And that's what gave him then the green light to Paskin. But that still means that she took the psak to another Talmud Chacham. Is she allowed to do that? So now, as Tosafot says over here, the fiat pshat, and the simple reading of the Gemara over here, mashma dekachhe min ledvareha, aval binyan acher. In the end, he does believe her, but in another way. So originally we thought that he was relying on her, period. And therefore, he said originally that was Tamei. He switches to Tahor because she's telling him that Rabbi Bar Chana, in other cases, would say Tahor. And that's why he said Tahor. That was her Havamina. The Gemara rejected that and said, no, Agamrei Samach. He relied on his own Mesorah. But the way Tosafot says it doesn't mean that he solely relied on his own Mesorah, but rather, below the Vareah, Lo Yamatir, Avagab Gamrei Samach. That even though he got from his own Mesorah and his own learning, he thought it was Tahor. Nevertheless, he wasn't willing to paskin that way until she came along and said Rabbi Bar Chana would say that it is Tahor in that case. So he wasn't relying on her for the psak. The psak he got to on his own. He was relying on her for the information that Rabbi Bar Chana was mitaher in such a case. Once he knew that, he was willing to give the psak. But that then runs into a problem. Still, if that's the situation, how could he paskin against Rabbi Bar Chana, who said Tamei, and now he's saying Tahor? Tosafot says that you have to say now that it's not like I just explained. It's not that he knew the psak and he relied on her to get the backing from Rabbi Bar Chana to say he wasn't undermining her, but rather, Heicha Agamrei Samach. If you are relying on your own Mesora, Rashai Lahatir, you have permission to be Matir Apagav the Chacham Kvar Asar. So the question of whether you're Osir or Matir, if you have a strong Mesora and you feel the Psak is otherwise, according to this view in the Bali Tosafot, you're allowed to Paskin that way. And that's what he says the conclusion of the Gemara is over here, that a Gamrei Samach means he had a Mesora, and that Mesora gives you the right to Paskin even against another Rav in the city. If you were just doing it midato from your own intuition or your own learning, that you can't do and argue on another posek in the city. Then you have to convince him to change his mind. You can't paskin against him. On the other hand, if you have it at the Mesora that you have this information, then you can paskin against the other party because you're not doing it at shikul adat. It's not a psak that requires hachra'ah. It's a psak of Mesora. And when you have a psak of Mesora, you can override the other psak of the other individual, because you have a clear Mesora with regards to this. That's the way the Bali Tosafot explain it. And then they bring in the question of, how did Yalta do this? How did she shop the psak? So the Bali Tosafot say that the isur of such a psak is not on the person shopping the psak. You're allowed to take this to numerous individuals to show them, because the more people see it, the better the psak is going to be. So you as the questioner have a right to go and show this to multiple people and ask the question of multiple people. The person that's restricted or obligated not to give a psak is the judge. that if he knows that someone else gave the psak halacha, he's not allowed to undermine that, even if he feels differently about it. And so that's who the restriction on. The restriction was not on Yalta. The restriction was on Rabbi Yitzchak by Rabbi Yehuda. So now that he has that restriction, he wouldn't be allowed to give the psak against Rabbi Bar Chana, were it not, according to Tosafot, for the fact that he had it in the Sora. That the Sora gives him the right to paskin against Rabbi Bar Chana, even in the face of the halacha that you're obligated to defer to the other Talmud Chacham and not paskin against him. So that's the way the Bali Tosafot explained over here. The Bali Tosafot and Chulin give a different answer, and the Tosafot the Rosh says the same thing over here, which is that the restriction against stopping the psak is only if you don't disclose. Only if you don't come to the other Chacham and say, what's the psak here? That is problematic. If you come to the other Chacham and say, so-and-so already paskin for me that it was Tomei, what do you think? That is permissible, because then you've given the information to the new Posek, and the new Posek now can deal with the fact that his compatriot, his peer, said it was different than what he wants to say over here. And because you disclose the information, then you're allowed to go shop the psak to other individuals. But there, the Bali Tosafot in Chulin, and the Tosafot Rosh says over here, you still can't paskin against the other posek. You can't paskin against them, even though they're disclosing to you the information. You have to go back to that posek and convince him to change his mind. You can't paskin directly against him. Then, over here, the reason Rabbi Yitzchak ben Rabbi Yehuda did change his mind, or did paskin that way, is because she gave him the information that Rabbi Bar Chana in other situations and said it was Tahor. And that's why he was willing to give the psak. Not that he relied on her for the psak, but like the Havamina of the Tosafot, that information gave him the green light to paskin against Rabbi Bar Chana, because Rabbi Bar Chana really would have paskin that way as well had it not been for the fact that he was compromised in his eyes on that day. All right, so now Rabbi Dam Balayla, he saw a sighting of Dam. Somebody brought him a Maro Dam at night to see. B'timei. And then he said it was Tamei. Ra'ah bayom. He looked at it again in the morning. V'tiher. And he thought it was Tahor. Himtin sha'achat. He went back another hour. Chazar b'timei. He didn't look at it necessarily again. That's what Rashi says. But he went back and said it was Tamei. He changed his mind. Amar oili shematayiti. Whoa, to me, maybe he made a mistake. Shematayiti. Maybe he made a mistake. Badaita. He definitely made a mistake. Titania, lo yomar chacham, ilu avalach, hayavadai tamei. Chacham can't say, if it was moist, then it definitely would have been tamei, because it's dry now, but if it was moist, it would be tamei. Ela, amar, en lo ledayan, elamashin yabrot. The dayan can only paskin what is in front of him. So what in front of him is a sighting that's tahor, and even though he says, had it been moist, it would have been tamei, doesn't matter. We're not seeing moist dam in front of you, you're seeing dry dam. And you got to give the psak halacha based on what you see. So Rabbi clearly made a mistake, because whatever he saw at night should have been his psak, because that's what's in front of him. So in the morning when he changed his psak, it was incorrect, and that's why he went back afterwards and said it was tamei. So he definitely made a mistake, and that's why he was reversing his psak. So that can't be the explanation of what transpired here. So the Gemara says, okay, mikara achazke v'tamei. In the beginning, he thought it was tamei. Kaman de Chazal de Tzafra Dishtane, in the morning when he got up and saw that it had changed colors, Amar, then he said, Vadai Tahor, Habo, it must be Tahor, Ubalai Lahu, the Lord Chazi Shapir, but I didn't see it properly at night. Now even though you're allowed to see Marot Dam at night, we're going to see in a second by the light of a candle, nevertheless, he thought maybe I didn't have good lighting and I didn't see it well. So when he saw it in the morning, then he says, it must be that it was Tahor, because I'm looking at it now and it's Tahor. And at night it was Tahor also. I just didn't have good lighting or I didn't look at it properly. Came in the Chazad Hadar Ishtane. When he saw it afterwards a third time, not like we saw in the Havamina where we just said the third time he just changed his mind, but he saw it a third time again, and he saw that it had changed even further. It had gotten lighter, even less Tamei. Amar Hai Tamei Hu. That Mareh was Tamei at night. It is fading over time. So what he realized was that when he saw it at night, it was Tamei, and he was right about that. In the morning when he got up and he saw that it was a Mara that was Tahor, he assumed he was wrong. It was much lighter than he thought, and therefore he was Mitaharit. But then we waited a little longer, took a look at it again, he saw it faded even more. He realized that his Pesach at night was correct. that originally when he saw it, it was Tameh, and between the time he saw it at night and the morning, it faded. And that's why he was being Metaheret in the morning. So when he saw it continuing to fade, that was an indication that whatever he saw at night was different than what he was seeing now. Once he knew that, he was comfortable saying that it was Tameh, because his original opinion was correct. Rabbi Badik Lohraner, Rabbi used to check by candlelight. So we see that, like we saw in the story. But we also know now that it is a fine way to check the Marot Dam. Rabbi Yishmol B'Rabbi Yossi, probably, Badik Bayom Amunan Bene Amude. He used to check on a cloudy day, Bene Amude, between the pillars. That's an expression that is used in the Gemara in Brachot and Davchet, where it says there that Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yossi, even though there were 13 shuls in their city, they used to daven Bene Amude. They used to daven between the pillars. Between the pillars means in the Beit Midrash, where they learnt. They felt it was better to daven in the Beit Midrash, where they learnt, than in a Beit Knesset. And the Beit Midrash is known by this, the place of the pillars. The Ben Amude means that when he was in his seat in the yeshiva, he would just check it, even though it was a cloudy day, and the lighting wasn't perfect. When you check it, you have to check it between the shade and the sunlight. You can't be in the shade because it's too dark. Can't be in the sun because it's too bright. You need to be right on the edge there where it's light enough, but it's not in the direct sunlight and it's not totally shade. Rav Nachman Amar Ravua bechama ubetzel yado. You can do it in the sun itself and shade the sun with your hand. So you can create the shading through your hand and then you'll be in the brighter area. So you'll get good lighting, but you're not getting direct sunlight, which could then cause a distortion of the color, to the point where you wouldn't recognize the color or see it properly. Gemara says, Uke mazug shnei chalakim. The Mishnah said that when it's a mazug, it has to be two parts water to one part wine from the wine of the Sharon. And it says here, Tana hasharoni didon kekarmelei chai. Hello mazug. Undiluted in its raw state, not diluted. The Sharoni, where you have to dilute it, two parts water to one part wine, the wine from the Carmel, you do it without diluting it. It has the same color. So Rashi over here brings two girsas over here. Says Eid Garse, Sharoni Nidona Carmeli. That the Carmel wine is exactly like the Sharon wine. And that would mean you have to dilute it two parts water to one part wine. The way that we have the girsa has the word chai in it, it is that the undiluted Carmel wine is similar to the diluted Sharon wine. Chadash, new or fresh wine, lo yashan and not fermented wine. I'm Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Dumi, Bikulan Eid Bulkim Otam, Elabakos, Tiberia Pashut. When you want to do this test to get the colors, you have to put it into a glass cup from Tiberia. My taima, Rabbi Shakolo Olam Kulo, everywhere else in the world, Magzik Log, a goblet or a glass utensil that holds a log, Osimota Mimane. They use 100 zuz worth of raw material. Shnei Lugim, when they make it out of 2 log, Osimota Mimataim. They make it out of 200. So basically they double the raw materials in the cup or the goblet that is twice the size. Because Tveria Pashut, the simple glass cups of Tveria, Afil Makzik Shnei Lugim Osim Oto Mimaneh. Even if it holds 2 lugim, they only use a maneh worth of raw materials. Which means, Vaidi de Kolish, since it's very thin glass, Yidia Batfei, it's easier to see the color. You don't get a distortion of the color through the thickness of the glass because it's a very thin glass. So that's why he's saying that you should do this mixture in these glasses of Tveria because the fact that they're very thin glass makes it then that you can see and contrast the color properly. The thicker the glass, the more distortion you get, just like you have distortion if you put it in sunlight or do certain things that cause a distortion of the color. Over here, we require that you don't use too thick a glass because that also causes a distortion in the color. Okay, with that we end the second parak, Hadran Alach, Kol Hayad.